National Broadcasting Company brings you another in a series of general discussions by that noted woman commentator and former foreign correspondent, Dorothy Thompson. Miss Thompson.
In the midst of an enormous number of rumors, most of them unconfirmed, a few positive sources of information are at our disposal. These, they're rather dry to read, are first, the text of the British White Paper on the correspondence with the German government over Poland. Secondly, the text of Prime Minister Chamberlain's statement in the House of Commons yesterday. Third, the text of Hitler's address to the Reichstag yesterday. Fourth, a synopsis of the speech of Prime Minister Chamberlain before the House of Commons today. The British White Paper is an amazing document. It gives the entire exchange of correspondence between Mr. Chamberlain and Hitler and the texts of verbal communications made by the British ambassador in Berlin to Hitler and Hitler's replies previous to the German attack on Poland. This white paper makes it clear that the British Prime Minister from the beginning has insisted that Britain stands behind her pledge to Poland, insisted that Germany and Poland must negotiate matters between the two nations as equals, and that the British government was ready to assist in creating conditions in which such negotiations could take place, but that those conditions would necessitate a truce. Hitler, in replying, unrolled innumerable questions, including that of colonies, which he relinquished, and including pledges of his desire for the warmest friendship with England. The German communications contain numerous attacks on Poland, but never come down to an answer to the specific standpoint taken by the British government. On the contrary, Hitler's notes say that there is no room for doubt as to the fact that understanding cannot be bought at the price of any renunciation of vital German interests. In document 5, which is Hitler's reply to the second letter from Mr. Chamberlain, the German government says that it is unable to bind itself, and this is very important. It's unable to give guarantees or participate in guarantees regarding Poland without the Soviet Union being associated with those guarantees. In this same note, the German government asks the British government to see that a Polish emissary with full powers is dispatched to Poland to arrive on Wednesday. The German government, the note says, will then draw up proposals for a solution and submit these to the British government before the arrival of the Polish negotiator. The next item is a telegram from London to the British ambassador, saying that it's unreasonable to expect that the British government can produce a Polish plenipotentiary in Berlin on such short notice. This was presented to Mr. Hitler with a note from Sir Neville Henderson, the British ambassador, saying that the British were advising Warsaw to avoid frontier incidents and begging the Germans to send similar instructions to Danzig. A follow-up telegram again urges Sir Neville to make it clear that the Polish government can only be expected to maintain restraint if the German government reciprocates. And in yet another telegram, sent the same day, Wednesday, the British government protests that the demand that a Polish representative come to Berlin to receive the German demand is unreasonable, the demand in the time set. This telegram asks Sir Neville to suggest to the German government that it adopt the normal diplomatic procedure, and when its proposals are ready, pass them to the Polish ambassador for transmission to Warsaw and invite suggestions for the conduct of negotiations. The British government also asks the German government to communicate the proposals to Britain. On the same night, still Wednesday, a formal reply of the British government to the German government sums up and elucidates the British government's position taken in the telegram. Now, what happened then is this, that instead of communicating the proposals to the British government, the German government released them by radio and followed that up by a note to Great Britain accusing the Poles of being unwilling to negotiate. That was on Thursday. This note, for the first time formally, presented either the British or the Poles with a 16 proposal. Telegrams of instruction from the British government to Sir Neville Henderson on Thursday say that the Polish government are taking steps to establish contact with the German government through the Polish ambassador in Berlin. And they ask, the telegrams ask, whether Dr. Karl Burkhardt, the League of Nations Commissioner for Danzig, might be employed to bring about a truce in Danzig, where the Nazis, according to the British, were committing acts of sabotage. The reply to this came yesterday from the German government, and the reply was in the form of Hitler's speech accompanied by an attack on Poland by air and from four directions on land. The last communication of Sir Neville to the British government, which was sent out very late on Thursday evening, was that the Polish ambassador was not received by Herr von Ribbentrop, the friendly German foreign minister, until late Thursday evening, and that the Polish ambassador then, late that night, had tried to get into contact with Warsaw, but was unable to do so because all means of communication with Poland had been closed by the German government. This truly remarkable correspondence indicates that the Polish ambassador was never given even an opportunity to receive the proposals and transmit them to his government before Germany went to war. The next document that we have is Mr. Chamberlain's statement in the House of Commons yesterday, in which he summed up the contents of the white paper and made the fateful statement, quote, "In these circumstances, it appears to the government of the United Kingdom and France that by its action, the German government has created conditions which call for the immediate implementation of the undertaking of Britain and France to come to the assistance of the Poles," unquote. There is another statement in this speech of Mr. Chamberlain, which seems to me very important. He said, quote, "We have no quarrel with the German people except that they allowed themselves to be governed by a Nazi government. As long as that government pursues the method which it has so persistently followed within the last 2 years, there will be no peace in Europe," unquote. Now, the next thing we have is Mr. Hitler's speech, which I dealt with yesterday, and which accompanied the outbreak of the attack on Poland. Last night I dealt at length with this speech because of certain very significant passages in it, particularly near the end. I found it significant that Hitler was warning the Reichstag, that is to say, the party commissars, that they must take measures to prevent treason against the Nazis inside Germany. He said, quote, "Whoever believes himself able, directly or indirectly, to withstand this national command will fall. Traitors can expect nothing but death," unquote. And it is significant that the published and official text is edited. It does not conform exactly to the phonograph record of the speech. In the speech, Hitler instructed the party leaders that it was their duty to see that the morale was kept up in every district, ward, and cell of the intricate organization which covers all of Germany with what is actually a party espionage system. And he announced dramatically that he would win the Polish fight or die. Now, certain actions have also taken place. The British government last night informed the German government that it must withdraw its troops from Polish soil as a preface to negotiations or expect war. This morning, Mr. Chamberlain reported to the House of Commons that he had not received a reply to the British ultimatum. He said that he felt certain that he would be able to make a definite statement tomorrow. The Prime Minister said that the note had been presented to Herr von Ribbentrop at 9:30 last night, that Herr von Ribbentrop had replied that he must submit the communication from Hitler, and that no reply had come. Mr. Chamberlain assured the House of Commons that the delay did not indicate the slightest weakening on the part of either Britain or France. Meanwhile, we learn that another note has been sent to the German government today, but it is impossible to confirm whether or not there is a time limit set to an answer, although it would seem to be indicated by the fact that Mr. Chamberlain all but promised a definite answer when the House meets at noon tomorrow, which will be 7:30 in the morning, our time. Meanwhile, the British and French ambassadors are still in Berlin. The Polish ambassador left Berlin today with an ambiguous statement that if one liked to call it that, one could call it a severance of diplomatic relations. He added, quote, "Many accepted terms of international law go by the board these days," unquote. Now, what are the British and French governments waiting for? That's the crucial question. Are they waiting to see what Italy will do? The only word we have from Italy is an inspired statement put out on Wednesday in Rome that Signor Mussolini thinks that the whole European problem should be taken up and readjusted. We learn that the Italian Council of Ministers met yesterday, said that the origin of the German-Polish conflict lies in the Versailles Treaty, and that the Duce wishes to assure to Europe a peace based on justice and declares that Italy will take no initiative whatsoever toward military operations, which seem to indicate that Italy is neutral and that Italy has not yet abandoned the idea of a five-power conference. Furthermore, Hitler's speech indicated clearly that he renounced any Italian cooperation as far as the Polish campaign is concerned. Now, we really need somebody from the Federal Bureau of Investigation to operate on such clues as we have, but these things come out of the official statement. First, Mr. Chamberlain and Monsieur Deladier are grateful to Mussolini. Two, Mussolini is not going to engage in military operations and still believes that there may be a general peace. Three, war action has been delayed. Four, Mr. Chamberlain has said that there can be no peace with the Nazi government unless it radically changes its policy. Five, Mr. Hitler has said he will win or die. Six, Lord Halifax and Mr. Chamberlain both declared this evening that they could not enter into a five-power parley until German troops left Poland. There's that five-power parley again that Mussolini is so keen on. And Lord Halifax said, quote, if the German government is willing to withdraw its forces, the British government will consider the position the same as it was before the German forces crossed the Polish frontier. But Mr. Hitler has said that he will not withdraw the Polish forces. I mean, he said publicly in his Reichstag speech that he will go on with what he is doing or die. And so the student of the news is led to ask, is it barely possible that something is going on in Germany that we know nothing about? Mr. Hitler's speech indicated that he's afraid of something in Germany. And this was borne out by a decree which became known last night. The German government announced that anyone listening to foreign radio broadcasts would be arrested, and anyone transmitting what he might hear on a foreign broadcast would be killed. I'd like to remind you that a few days ago, the German government suspended the mail service between the army and civilians. The army is unable to communicate with the civilian population. I do not pretend to know what all this means, but it certainly means more than meets the eye. Reports show that the German people are very apathetic. At least that's what I make out of the heavily censored broadcasts which come out of Germany. It has been reported that Hitler expected to consummate a lightning war on Poland over this weekend. And it has been stated, by no official source, but on what is called in journalese very high authority, that the German plan was to take Poland in a very quick war, a lightning war, confront the Western powers with a fait accompli, and then negotiate. But the British government demands that German troops leave Poland obviously rules out this possibility. Perhaps, of course, the whole delay concerns the position of the Italian government. But obviously the British Prime Minister thinks that it is well to play for time, for one reason or another. He's not going to back down, but he wants time. Meanwhile, please recall that in one of the white paper communications, Mr. Hitler said that he could make no guarantees about Poland without consulting the Soviet Union. Please recall that in yesterday's speech, Hitler paid fulsome tribute to the Soviet Union. And a military mission of six generals from Russia arrived in Berlin today. What is that military mission from the Soviets going to advise Hitler to do? Good night.
You've been listening to Dorothy Thompson, outstanding woman commentator on world affairs. Miss Thompson will be heard again tomorrow over most of these stations at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time.
You will now hear a statement by the Prime Minister. I am speaking to you from the cabinet room at 10 Downing Street. This morning, the British ambassador in Berlin handed the German government a final note, stating that unless we heard from them by 11 o'clock, that they were prepared at once to withdraw their troops from Poland, a state of war would exist between us. I have to tell you now that no such undertaking has been received, and that consequently this country is at war with Germany. You can imagine what a bitter blow it is to me with all my long struggle to win peace has failed. Yet I cannot believe that there is anything more or anything different that I could have done and that would have been more successful. Up to the very last, it would have been quite possible to have arranged a peaceful and honorable settlement between Germany and Poland. But Hitler would not have it. He has evidently made up his mind to attack Poland, whatever happens. And although he now says he put forward reasonable proposals which were rejected by the Poles, that is not a true statement. The proposals were never shown to the Poles, nor to us. And though they were announced in the German broadcast on Thursday night, Hitler did not wait to hear comments on them, but ordered his troops to cross the Polish frontier the next morning. His action shows convincingly that there is no chance of expecting that this man will ever give up his practice of using force against his will. He can only be stopped by force. And we in France are today, in fulfillment of our obligations, joining to the aid of Poland, who is so bravely resisting this wicked and unprovoked attack upon her people. We have a clear conscience. We have done all that any country could do to establish peace. But a situation in which no word given by Germany's ruler could be trusted, and no people or country could feel itself safe, has become intolerable. And now that we have resolved to finish it, I know that you will all play your part with calmness and courage. At such a moment as this, the assurances of support which we have received from the Empire are a source of profound encouragement to us. When I finish speaking, certain detailed announcements will be made on behalf of the government. We need your close attention. The government have made plans under which it will be possible to carry on the work of the nation in the days of stress and strain that may be ahead. But these plans need your help. You may be taking your part in the fighting services or as a volunteer in one of the branches of civil defense. If so, you will report for duty in accordance with the instructions you receive. You may be engaged in work essential to the prosecution of war or the maintenance of the life of the people, in factories, in transport, in public utility concerns, or in the supply of other necessities of life. If so, it is of vital importance that you should carry on with your job. Now, may God bless you all. And may we defend the right. For it is evil things that we shall be fighting against. Brute force, sad face, injustice, oppression, and persecution. And against them I am certain that the right will prevail.
You have been listening to a transcription made by NBC of a broadcast delivered by Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain to the British Empire at 6:15 a.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time this morning. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
It seems to me that there is hardly any place for comment on or interpretation of the news this morning. From hour to hour, during these days of tension and of strain, we, the people of the United States, have followed the events toward the climax this morning, which since Friday, when the German army attacked Poland by land and by air, has seemed to be inevitable. We, like all the other people in the world, regardless of government, have hoped and prayed that another way out might be found for the tragic dilemma of Europe. This morning we heard a voice, not a young voice, an old voice, a tired voice, and a sad voice, declared that he had done what he could to keep the peace, that he thought he had done everything possible. He had asked the German government to withdraw its troops and open negotiations. But his two notes, the last with a time limit, had brought no answer. So Europe is at war. All attempts at this moment to discuss the principles, the elements, and changes of front in this conflict seem out of place. But they will be discussed in the course of time, for facts are always related to principles and have little reality except in relation to them. This much is certain. A new page starts today in the history of the world. And a new page starts also in the history of our own country. We await tonight the president's message on our position as a neutral nation in this conflict. But over and above and more important, I think, than any position toward Europe which we may take today is the attitude that we take toward ourselves. Developments are sure to be rapid. They will move with lightning swiftness. No human mind can foresee the course of the next week and month. Forces have started that will take on a life of their own and assume unpredictable shape. Yet we may have much to do with molding the shape of things to come. Just now it seems to me our native love of peace should concentrate upon avoiding division and of achieving here, in this country, the maximum of unity and of goodwill each to the other. In this country, a great continent lying between two oceans, live men and women who are the offspring of all the warring nations of Europe. And we have lived together in amity for 150 years, broken only by our most tragic era, the era that cut that age in two, our Civil War. Twice in our history, in 1812 and in 1917, we too cut that age in two, our Civil War. Twice in our history, in 1812 and in 1917, we too have been participants in a world war. But neither of those unhappy times could compare in horror to the 4 years in which we ourselves were divided and Americans fought Americans on American soil. Whatever this war may turn out to be, it did not come about because people did not have enough to eat. We seek for a guiding principle through the times to come. We can surely ask of every policy and of every idea, does it help forward a more perfect union? Does it aid justice? Does it help ensure domestic tranquility? Does it contribute to the common defense? Does it promote the general welfare? And will it defend and secure to ourselves and to our children the blessings of liberty?
You have been listening to Dorothy Thompson, outstanding woman commentator on world affairs. Miss Thompson will be heard again tomorrow night over most of these stations at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time.
5:30 Memphis time.
National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.
This is London. In a few moments, His Majesty the King will speak to his people.
In this gray hour, perhaps the most fateful in our history, I send to every household of my people, both at home and overseas, this message, spoken with the same depth of feeling for each one of you as if I were able to cross your threshold and speak to you. myself. For the second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war. Over and over again, we have tried to find a peaceful way out of the differences between ourselves and those who are now our enemies. But it has been in vain. We have been forced into a conflict, for we are called with our allies to meet the challenge of a principle which, if it were to prevail, would be fatal to any civilized order in the world. It is the principle which permits a state, in the selfish pursuit of power, to disregard its treaties and its solemn pledges, which sanctions the use of force or threat of force against the sovereignty and independence of other states. Such a principle, stripped of all disguise, is surely the mere primitive doctrine that might is right. And if this principle were established throughout the world, the freedom of our own country and of the whole British Commonwealth of Nations would be in danger. But far more than this, the peoples of the world would be kept in the bondage of fear, and all hopes of settled peace and of the security of justice and liberty among nations would be ended. This is the ultimate issue which confronts us. For the state of all that we ourselves hold dear, and of the world's order and peace, it is unthinkable that we should refuse to meet the challenge. It is to this high purpose that I now call my people at home and my peoples across the seas, who will make our cause their own. I ask them to stand calm and firm and united in this time of trial. The task will be hard. There may be dark days ahead, and war can no longer be confined to the battlefield. But we can only do the right as we see the right, and reverently commit our cause to God. If one and all we keep resolutely faithful to it, ready for whatever service or sacrifice it may demand, and then, with God's help, we shall prevail. May He bless and keep us all.